Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It is, man, it is really, really uncomfortably hot.
As
today may be the hottest, I believe today is the hottest day we have had this year.
As Rob Thomas sings in the song Smooth, which I believe is celebrating its 25th anniversary this week.
Is that right?
The song from the Santana Supernatural album, big hit, 1999-2000, lead singer of Matchbox 20, Rob Thomas, sings to open that song, Bill. Man, it's a hot one, and that
is it indeed is. Yeah. Temperature, the high today was going to be right around 100, and that's not the heat index. That's not the feels like. That would be just the temperature.
Haven't done this in a while. Shout out to the laborers out there. Right, whether it's the folks keeping the power on or keeping the water running.
Our power flickered a couple of times this morning at around 10 something. Did it happen on campus?
It did not. Okay. I did not experience a power flicker.
Okay.
Either at home or on campus around that time period.
I thought, oh man, the hottest day of the year. Please, God, don't go out today.
Sure. Oh no, shout out to the folks keeping the power on, folks keeping the water running, the folks keeping the internet and the cable and all those, the phone lines.
And then the folks whose jobs are outside.
Oh sure.
Oh man, the folks that are doing the lawn services, roofers.
Roofers.
Oh my. Oh my. This is
deserve a raise. Every roofer out there, even the worst roofer, deserves a raise right now because they're showing up for work.
Yeah, I would say that too, because those nails are really uncomfortable when you run across them. But yeah, just be careful if you have to be out, and try not to stay out for too long. We are cool and comfortable here in the studio.
This is when Bill would do an unsolicited plug for like a Powerade Zero at this point, right? Because that's pretty good on a.
I'm more of a Gatorade Zero than a Powerade Zero.
Sure. No, you know what? They're all, and I am not brand loyal to
a
sports drink. I'll take the cheap one. I'll take the cold one. We had a guy, I think I told you about
when
this.
When it's this hot, I don't care if they're cold because I want to get it in me as quickly as possible.
We had a fella working on the, we had a fella doing edging in front of my property a couple of weeks ago. And, I went outside. I was about to come to the show, ask him, hey bud, the hydrate, any to drink, a little agua, a little something. I gave him. I had an old Body Armor lantern, not that old. It wasn't like it hadn't fermented or something. But like I had like the Fruit Punch Body Armor. Bill, I've never seen a person drink something so fast. Like it really was. And you understand. Like
I'm telling you.
When you're holding something heavy in the heat.
My wife will come out if I'm doing something in the yard and force me. But it's like I'll tell her, don't bring me a cold one just yet. I'll have a cold one when I have time to sit in the shade and sip it. But if I'm just trying to take a break, bring me one of those that's not refrigerated. And I can like two swallows, that thing is gone, and I feel like it at least gets a little of the fluids back in me.
It was hot on Saturday in Kentucky, walking around the Arboretum and the Wildlife Preserve in Lexington on campus. But I'd prepared, I'd brought a couple of things to drink. Dad had done the same thing, and they have a little gift shop lobby area in the front, and they have multiple places where you can fill your water bottles and stuff, and they advise you about the heat. I think they don't want heat-related emergencies out there in the wilderness of the
that makes sense.
Of the state wildlife preserve. It could get pretty hairy. So I was prepared for that. I was not prepared, Bill, when Ferguson and I went to that Braves game with the group a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
The walk from where we, because we parked, and I think I'm part of the. You know, fine. I'll walk and I'll park economically. Uh-huh. And you know, I'm still in that club for now. And so that's
what you know what I'm in. I'm parking at the MARTA station, and I'm riding sure. to the closest thing near.
Sure, and my
that's what I'm parking.
How about this? I got an uncle who's rocking the. I'm parking in the Delta lot because you know he's a Delta employee.
Oh yeah,
and he's got maybe the sweetest parking in the entire Truist. I mean, you see that as you walk up
right.
to the battery, you see the lot for Delta employees, and that's where he told me to park. And then he was like, "Oh, wait, you're not a
yeah."
No, so we grabbed a spot. I would probably say more than a mile away, and the walk there was fine. The walk back after a baseball game was just, you know, you're Googling heat stroke symptoms to make sure you're okay. You know, I had the panting and the drooling, and I realized I was looking at heat stroke symptoms for your pets, you know, but it was still like it was a lot of the same stuff. So no, but back to the original point, Bill, stay as cool as you can out there, because it is the heat today is unforgiving in the Auburn Opelika area.
Oh, absolutely. As I was saying, we're comfortable here in the studio. Bill, Dan, Drew at the controls. No Andy Burcham with us today because he is on vacation. He and his wife, Jan, are taking a vacation, and deservedly so.
Undisclosed location. He'll tell right. us about it when he comes back if he wants. We don't want to.
No.
We don't want any of the sickos out there following Andy around.
No, that's right. He deserves to enjoy his vacation.
What if it turns out Andy is like, you know, a Carmen Sandiego-esque international criminal, right? And he's going around committing heists and stuff, and that's why he doesn't want he's Danny Ocean or something, and that's what no
so, Andy Ocean.
Andy Ocean is
that brings back flashbacks.
Yeah, Burcham's 11 is going to they're putting together another job. No, so we'll hear from Andy when he comes back, and by then, I mean, again, 3 weeks from today, media days would be continuing. You know, we're getting closer to the start of SEC media days. We're going to have great coverage of that throughout the Lucky Seven, Bill. All 7 hours of original programming, Doug's show mm-hmm. on the line, and our show are all going to have a presence at media days, and we're going to be talking
yes,
about.
Yes, you are the presence from the drive.
I will be there representing the drive in Texas, and might try to see an All-Star game related festivity.
Oh, that would be so cool.
While I'm there, either the home run derby or the game itself,
and then I will see All-Stars of a different type. With a couple of groups that are in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. Who are you seeing that week?
Farner and Styx.
Very cool. That is
and John White.
Do you have a favorite Styx song?
I don't know. I always sort of like "Don't Let It End." But
ooh, okay. Don't Worry, Gatto.
Mr. Roboto. That was not my favorite. It was all right.
They got some really good.
Oh,
ones,
they really so. Do.
They got some really good songs.
So, tougher for me with Foreigner because I really really like.
So
it.
Media days in 3 weeks, and we'll talk to Andy Burcham again between now mm-hmm. and then.
Yeah, we should get him next week.
I would nominate that maybe we rerun the John Cohen interview at the bottom of the hour in lieu of Andy Burcham. Like maybe we if
we
there's
do
time.
That.
I know you're gone the rest of the week. Right?
I am out for the rest of the week. We're headed to the beach.
Here tomorrow with Jacob, and
right?
I'm here Thursday.
Yeah, special show tomorrow.
I'm here Thursday.
It'll be like on the drive.
That's right, on the drive. Jacob Goins coming in and sitting in for Bill, and we'll talk about our media days coverage since we're both going mm-hmm. Tomorrow. Among the other things that we'll do, should be a lot of fun with Jacob. Thursday should have Justin Ferguson in the house. I think. I mean, he's got
a little busy this week, isn't he?
He's busy this week. I might have to make some calls.
Thursday he might at least be able to do a little while.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, maybe over the phone. I might be
that's
asking
what,
for.
Yeah, I'm not saying demand that he has to be here.
I might be asking for a lot for Ferg to even like give us.
Let me tell you what. Two days before the big day, it was like
during the. During the break,
years ago.
During the break, I will tell you what I got Ferguson.
Oh, cool!
And the misses right. for the you know as a gift.
And then I'll tell no, I won't.
And then I think you know what? I still got the receipt. So if you give me the thumbs up
right.
or thumbs down, you can tell me.
No, okay.
You can tell me to turn back. But we've got so we'll see what we have from Ferguson on Thursday, the groom to be this week, and then Friday. We'll see. Right now, it's just me.
Because Drew is busy. Don and Donna Dunn are down somewhere around the Keys. I'll be on some beach. So
And I kind of want to go DJ the Ferguson rehearsal dinner.
Yeah.
So I might skip.
I think it's very legit.
I might show up as the surprise guest DJ at the Ferguson rehearsal dinner. So even a surprise to them. So we'll find out the rest of the week. But I would say if we have a moment, because we're talking to Jake in hour number two.
Yes.
People, I've heard really positive feedback about the interview we did with John Cohen 2 weeks ago, and I would nominate that maybe we rerun that. At the bottom of the hour.
We'll see how things are going. I had an idea for, yesterday while we were talking about road trips and things like that, I thought of something that everybody should have a reply to this, a story about this. I was thinking about summer jobs. Who has not had at least, everybody's had summer jobs. Everybody I know. I didn't know that many people that were so privileged that they never had to work at all during the summer. But summer jobs, sometimes you're extremely fortunate and it turns out to be, man, a great thing that you love or you don't have to do anything or, Other times there are jobs that, God, you wish the summer would hurry up and get over. It doesn't matter what you have to do. Just please get this over with and get me out of this job because you're not getting paid enough or it's too much work or whatever. So I'd like stories of your memorable summer jobs. They can be good, they can be bad. I've got a couple that come to mind. As a matter of fact, most of them are both. Most of them were it didn't seem like it was going to be good, but it turned out to be pretty good, or you thought it was going to be great, and then there were a few catches in there. But some of the things that you've done to try to help support yourself over the summers.
Some would say, Bill, I've had nothing but summer jobs.
Yeah, some would say that, I would think, Dan.
In my life, yeah. But no,
it's nothing but a summer job.
But it's – no, I mean – I the first job I ever had was summer in high school, board hopping and working behind the scenes and eventually jumping on the air a little bit for radio stations.
Radio's not even a job.
Down in Florida. it paid me. And then I got into my first non-radio job. I was waiting tables at Buster's down in Destin across the street from the outlet malls, the place that used to do. No one believes me, but this is absolutely true, that they had an hour a day, 5 days a week, where they did Oyster Mania, and they had a hookup from Apalachicola, and they would do, at one point, it was a dollar dozen. Like one.
Did you know what hour it was ahead of time?
It was four to five.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just like, okay.
Either four to five or five.
You got to be in here, and either, when we do, we got an
four,
hour.
Either four to five or five to six, but okay. They would do limit one per customer, and it was, limit one per every person at your table, a dollar dozen oysters on the half shell.
Wow.
And we moved a lot of them.
I bet you did.
During Oyster Mania. I worked at I think we talked about it with Mitch recently, but a snack bar that was sort of, it was connected to a restaurant on the Sandestin Resort.
Right, sure did.
I'm sure the snack bar that I'm talking about has been either extensively renovated or condemned and knocked down and rebuilt, if there's even something there. But it was attached to, the restaurant was called Finn's, and I worked at the snack bar attached to that where people who were at the pool could walk up to the, and we had a little bit of the menu from Finn's. They'd bring some stuff over from the kitchen. We had a burger conveyor and stuff like that, but people could walk over, and that was a great job. That was just very, very, very laid back. Even people in a rush, like if there's a long line of people to order at a stand like that, people with tropical drinks in their hands at a pool are going to be more patient than your average grumpy customer. So people were pretty cool at that job, although it was somewhat confined,
right?
And that's not. Less than ideal circumstances to work in a really tightly confined space in the Northwest Florida heat.
But well, I was going to say, though, it sounds like most of your summer jobs, you haven't had a lot of working outside summer jobs.
I mean, the snack
that was my first few ones where I mean working outside, and that was South Alabama, Northwest Florida.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess I mean I haven't done like
labor.
Yeah, well, I mean the closest thing I did do some. I mean, largely service industry related labor. I mean, you know, in some of these restaurants are indoor outdoors, so you know, waiting tables in some outdoor heat. Or there was a summer where I was helping out with it was banquet, you know, banquet bartending. So if it was a group that needed, suppose you're having a large outdoor party and you want a group to come in and set up tables and have a little bartending stand or something, you know, that I would be part of the group that sets the event up and bartended with some other people. And that was fun for a summer, you know, doing like a lot of wedding receptions, a lot of family reunions and stuff like that in Seaside. And that was neat, but I would say as far as working outdoors, like that's the hard. I mean, setting up and taking down an outdoor wedding reception or
an outdoor family reunion
venue like that. Mm-hmm. and going until those things don't end until
they go late,
and everything needs to be back on the truck,
right,
you know, before anyone goes home. And so that, you know, that's I would say, as far as labor intensive, that's about as like the job that I came home feeling like I'd worked the hardest in my whole life, as far as, you know, of everything I've ever done, was because you know what else there's sand involved in all, like everything we're doing on the sand. And it you just do one or two of those a week to feel like you're working as hard as anybody.
All right, the first couple of summer jobs I had were a blast. I mean, they were great. I was a lifeguard at a lake that was close to home. That was great. I mean, there was enough trees and shade that it wasn't, you weren't getting blistered or anything. And it was basically just sit around and stay alert enough to make sure that there wasn't too much horseplay or somebody wasn't in trouble. I mean, that was great. And I, in 2 years and two summers, never had anybody. I mean, I jumped in, whistle going crazy.
You didn't lose any patience?
Only had a couple of occasions to even get in. And both times the kid that I was trying to help needed some help, but was embarrassed and fighting because they didn't want anybody to know they needed help. But I mean, that was a great job. The only thing is it didn't pay anything. It hardly paid anything at all. So the summer before my freshman year in college, I worked for my grandfather, was the Pure Oil distributor. You know, it became Union 76. Pure Oil distributor in Escambia County, Alabama, and Florida, and little surrounding areas there. So I drove the short gas truck, the one that is all the tank is, you know, connected to the body. It's not a trailer. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
That kind of gas truck. So I did that to earn myself a car.
Those things are that's serious business, right?
Am
I thinking about the wrong things?
No. Okay. It's a shorter one.
Okay.
It's the shorter one where the cab is connected to the tank. So it's like a big truck, but it's not nearly as big as a regular gas tanker. What would
you describe as the most dangerous job you've ever had? Have you ever had something that comes to mind as
that probably could have, may have been.
Okay.
Because you're driving flammable liquids, and you know, if there are any sparks, and back then everybody smoked, it seemed like. I mean, all the guys at the gas stations, or when you're delivering diesel to different places, everybody was coming out meeting you, they were smoking. But I did that all summer to earn my first car. My grandfather drove. He was a guy that traded cars every year. He had two vehicles. He had one. My grandmother had the other. And every other year he'd trade. So he never had a vehicle more than 2 years old. And his were always big, fast, sporty vehicles. I mean, he was a sharp dresser. He drove those flashy, fast cars. So I was really excited about, I'm going to work this summer. I'm not going to get paid, but it's going to pay off in a car. And so I worked that whole summer. And I worked, I mean, it was hard. It was pretty hard work. I mean, I'd have to be there 6 o'clock loading, you know, getting the tanker filled, and then drive to who knows where, drop off the, either the gas or the diesel, and then come back, make sure that the tank was flushed. And I mean, I had one screw up, one big screw up, where I forgot to close the cap of the tank after I'd emptied it one evening. And I went back out the next morning, started filling up. And my grandmother, who was the receptionist and the bookkeeper, came running out of the office, and I never saw her run before, came running out of the office screaming all kinds of things that we can't repeat on the air, because I had left the cap open and the gas that was going into the tank was running right out of the bottom down into the parking lot. So, yeah, I had to pay for, you know, a couple of trucks of sand to come in and get that taken care of.
Can't put that back in the truck either.
No, you can't. Yeah. But let me quickly get to the end of the story, because I see we've got calls coming in. Yeah, we've got a break coming up. All right, so at the end of the summer, I've worked all summer. I'm about to get my car. I'm going to come to school up here at Auburn. And we drive to Bruton, go to the car dealer, and on the lot, I mean, I see, oh, there's a Mustang, there's a Vette, there's a Stingray. It's like, those are the kinds of cars that I knew my grandfather would drive. But he's the guy paying. I'm looking, and he's talking, and he comes back, and he gives me keys, and they're keys to a four-door white Bel Air, a nine-year-old Chevrolet Bel Air. I mean, which is like great. It was like a grandmother's, not my grandmother's, but like a grandmother's car. So that was my first car. I was more than
disappointed. Did you have your heart set on one of the?
Oh man, I thought I was going to drive to school in something sporty. I drove to school and was thankful that you couldn't park on campus. All right, we will get to our first break of the afternoon. Hang on, right back with your calls and more here on the Tuesday Drive.
Hip pain is
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. You heard the number 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to the phones and go ahead. You're on the drive. Who are we talking to? Hello?
Caller, you're on the you're on the air.
I'm
not sure the caller realizes that they're on the air. We'll give him one more chance. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Nope, we're going to have to call him.
I guess not.
Appreciate the phone call from whoever that was.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so I mentioned Andy. Andy is Andy and Jan are headed out, but did you see his text?
I just saw
Andy
the update.
Andy set gravestones one summer. Ooh.
That's labor.
Set gravestones. Drove an asphalt truck the next.
That's heat. That's some real heat, man.
That is. I mean, wow.
I believe it.
Summer jobs. You get what you can, and some pay well.
Builds character, right?
The summer after my freshman year, I've mentioned a little about this story, was when the pipelines were being laid in Northwest Florida, the oil pipelines. Were being laid down there, so they paid pretty well, but that was some work. But fortunately, a week in, we were asked if anybody had any experience. This is where I mentioned, but I'd worked a week just helping dig. I mean, we got out and helped really dig the ditches. You had trenchers that would start it, but then you'd need to dig. And this is summertime, Northwest Florida. Digging ditches. And it's like, no, I really didn't want to do that, even though it paid pretty well. But then after a week or two, they asked if anybody had any experience with welding. And I'd taken a welding class like my spring quarter at Auburn. So I said yes. And I got hooked up with a great guy, Charlie Duplashane from Lake Charles, Louisiana, who was a master welder. And he was one that was not welding as the pipes were being laid in. He would go back and check the welds and patch if it needed. So he wasn't. He was pretty much on his own clock. So I was just with him, and we'd ride around, go to places where there had been welding being done, and he'd check. And he was very efficient. He was very quick. I learned a lot of things about how time clocks work, where if nobody sees you, as long as you're on the clock, hey, you're getting paid. So that turned out to be a very fortuitous situation, but it was hot regardless, but it was a whole lot better than the way it started. All right, 334-321-1390.
Congratulations to Tennessee on the
how about that
national championship.
The fifth different SEC team, fifth straight different SEC team to win the College World Series.
They seemed like the best team in college baseball for much of the year.
And had to come back from a down one zip in a best of three, and they did.
And
came back and won.
Seeming like the best team in the regular season doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to win the championship, because the playoffs are based around who's playing the best right now. But Tennessee was able to not just dominate much of the regular season this year and go into the tournament as the number one overall seed. They also make good on. And you think about that. We've had a year where Ole Miss, the last team in, goes on to win the college baseball, the College World Series. Mm-hmm. Tennessee, the team at the top, the number one team.
Very rare situation where the number one seed does win it. And a great year for Tennessee. 60 wins on the season with that win last night. So, and then Florida able to avoid one of the biggest collapses. Well, I guess the biggest collapse in over 80 would have been the biggest collapse in over 80 years. I think 1942.
Considering it's the championship too, though, I think it would have been just this would have been one of the worst losses. I mean, great comeback and everything for Edmonton if they'd happened, but it would have been one of the worst losses in the history of professional sports for Florida to blow a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Finals and lose the series. That doesn't happen. The Panthers are your Stanley Cup champions.
And their first ever title. So a couple of first-timers as far as winning their championships last night, with Tennessee in the College World Series and the Florida Panthers in the NHL Finals. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. Final few minutes here of hour number one. And let's see, something wanted to get to, some positive news for on Brian Battee, as his mother.
It does seem like most of the updates are at least trending
right
in the right
direction.
Well,
he's moved from intensive care to the intensive rehab. So that is a good sign. And he's been cleared to eat regular foods with no restrictions. So, I mean, that is, as his mother, Adrian, said, these small victories remind us of Brian's amazing resilience and strength.
Yes. Yeah, and the phrase used in on the GoFundMe, optimism, hope, and joy. So, like, that's absolutely, like, all the best to Brian and his family, and the hope is, like, it's got nothing to do with football.
No,
like,
absolutely
the hope,
not.
The hope is that he can live a healthy and productive life again. And so that's all the best to the Battee family.
Yeah, a little over a month. It was May 18th when the shooting happened. So that's great news.
And she makes reference, Adrian Battee makes reference to a traumatic brain injury as well in his recovery. And mm-hmm. so that's, I mean, just a You know, even with little pieces of positive news, you hear the phrase that he has a traumatic brain injury, and that is just, I mean, your heart sinks because that's such a battle to come back from, you know, and so all the best to them.
We're approaching the end of hour number one of the Tuesday Drive. Don't forget, Jake Crane from Crane & Company joins us at the bottom of hour number two.
Jake will be at Media Days in 3 weeks covering it for his outlet. You know, the Crane & Company. The Crane & Company team will be in full force there in Dallas to represent with Media Days heading to Texas this year. Looking forward to talking with Jake about that and a whole lot more.
Yeah, and again, a little different schedule for the rest of the week here on ESPN 106.7. Interesting. I mean, Doug has been out for a week. Back today. Today was his first day back with the Max Roundtable. Tomorrow is Jacob's last day. It is the last day for On the Line this week, as he will be out Thursday and Friday. And then I will be out Wednesday through Friday. So Jacob tomorrow going to fill in, going to sit in with Dan on the drive afternoon.
What are your must hit spots? Are you going to is this Pensacola?
Yeah, we're back in Pensacola.
Anywhere for some reason I thought you were taking the Destin Fort Walton Beach.
We looked at that. Yeah. I mean, we did that for a few years. We've been in Pensacola the last few years. Looked at it again, and no, it just worked out a little bit better.
I don't think you can go wrong between Panama City and Pensacola. Like, that whole stretch has so many.
Oh, the beaches are beautiful.
The
first
beaches
of all.
Are beautiful. The towns, you know, all have their own.
Charming. We've really gotten comfortable with downtown Pensacola, with the way everything is so walkable.
Give folks a recommendation for if they're going to take a trip to Pensacola anytime soon, like something they should check out.
Well, I mean, they're
Seville.
Seville. Yeah. I'd probably say Seville. Yeah. I would. Seville's been around forever. It has been around forever, but it's still a fun place to go, and it's got different styles of entertainment, different types of entertainment.
What else? A lot of good breakfast around there. A lot of good breakfast and some pretty good Italian food around there. So I mean, there's some
and
neat
of course,
stuff downtown.
And of course, I mean,
seafood.
I've got to get seafood tomorrow night. Or, we're going to make it down tomorrow afternoon, so the birthday dinner is going to be good. You know, I've got to have seafood tomorrow.
Tell you what, Graffiti downtown is pretty good. Been there a really long time for some pizza and Italian staples.
All right, we will get to our top of the hour break. Again, memorable summer jobs, anything on your mind, sports-wise or otherwise. Hour number two of the drive coming up. Stick with us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive just underway. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls here on this Tuesday edition of the show. We'd love to hear from you, and you can join us by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, that number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
It's the second hour of the show, and that means we're being brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. It's sort of a slow time, let's face it now. I mean,
interesting piece of news. I just saw on social media. This is up your alley.
Okay.
I like it. So the Twitter account for the NCAA's NCAA's PR, their public relations, social media page, where they'll update you on news from the council and rules proposals and things. The D1 council.
They knew that I was saying it's a slow day. We need some news.
How about this? The D1 council introduced a proposal to change the length of time in the transfer windows in the portal window from 45 days to 30 days.
And that's something Hugh Freeze has been talking about. A lot of coaches have. But, I mean, we've heard Hugh Freeze mention that many, many times that, hey, players that know they want to get into the portal, they don't need 45 days to get into the portal because you don't have to make a decision during that time. You just have to get in.
And so, and the vote expected to occur in October. And the NCAA includes in a subsequent tweet, data from the first 2 years of transfer windows indicate that the majority of transfers enter the portal
during the first 10 days.
First 4 weeks is the number that they've suggested. Yeah. Which would
I'd say the majority is in there within the first week and a half, and then almost everybody's in there by the first month.
And a more recent update on a different subject, but an interesting piece of news also from the NCAA D1 Council. They have voted to remove cannabinoids from the banned drug class for championships and postseason participation in football. That decision will not be final until the meeting concludes on Wednesday. Cannabinoids will now be addressed like other non-performance enhancing drugs, i.e. alcohol. NCAA will be focusing
on... Well, yeah, that does make sense. I would not call that a performance enhancing.
They will be focusing on harm reduction strategies to prevent problematic cannabis use, centering on the health of student athletes rather than discipline for athletes who test positive for that. So that's a noteworthy change. Schools can still have their own policies.
I guess conferences could have.
Schools and conferences can still have their own policies, but right. The NCAA not testing for or not banning removing cannabinoids from the list of banned drugs for championships and postseason participation in football, and that would be effective with the new college football playoff. That would be effective this fall if that rule holds on Wednesday. So a couple of pieces of news from the D1
Council. Yeah, the first
council.
One I think is something that makes so much sense. There's no reason for the transfer windows, especially when they're being put in at the end of season. So it's not like there's any other reason to wait that long to decide you're going to go into the portal.
It doesn't seem like there's a ton of popularity with the spring window either, right? And that's the window. I mean, so the window that the 15 days or the window that opens up at the end of the spring semester. I do wonder what the future will be of, because there seemed to be sort of widespread dissatisfaction among
football
coaches.
Football had split transfer portal windows, remember?
Right. Yeah. They had the
30 and a 15.
They had a 30 and a 15. Now reducing.
I wonder if it's going to be 15 and 15, or is it going to be 30 and that's it? That's odd.
Now removing the spring window entirely
would be a serious
development, and
that would be a serious deterrent, and that would be something a lot of coaches would just love to have.
Yes,
a lot of coaches, because they'd know that, all right, whoever we've got going into spring practice, we're going to have unless these players are planning on spending some time not playing ball.
Well, I'm of two minds on that, Bill, because, I mean, Auburn has added a couple of players since spring practice.
Oh, they have. They've added quite a few. They've added three defensive linemen. They added a defensive end.
They've taken advantage of players who have gone into the portal window in the spring.
That's where, Keandre Lambert-Smith came after the spring.
However, it does seem like, in general, there's dissatisfaction among coaches that you have to re-recruit your roster after spring practice is over,
right?
And
you don't have a chance
window.
To practice with them again until fall.
Yes, so that's something where I do wonder if there's going to be if there's going to be pressure to cut down on the number of days or even eliminate the number of days available for players to transfer
that's a good question window. As to exactly how that 30 days is going to be. Read the beginning of that again. It said is it a proposal? Is that what it is?
The D1 Council introduces proposals to change the transfer windows in basketball and football from 45 to 30 days. Vote expected to occur in October.
All right, so that's basketball.
So am I seeing? Is there Schlossnagel news? Is something going on there?
Oh, I don't know.
Let's take a look at that. In the meantime, Bill.
I was just looking at the. With the football transfer portal, as we were talking, I mean, if it's going to be just a 30-day window, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, are you going to have two different periods? Ooh. Basketball, you have one, and it's there, at the end of the year. Whoa. That is, there was talk about this a couple of years ago. Texas had tried to pry Jim Schlossnagel away from Texas A&M. Now with Texas, let's see, 6 days away from joining the SEC, they're going to come into this league with a new head baseball coach who just played for the College World Series and finished runner-up.
Yeah.
How about that? Schlossnagel moving from A&M to Texas.
Horns 247, the first one I'm seeing reporting on this. Scott Bagwell just texted me this update as well. Shout out to Scott, but yeah, 1 day after leading Texas A&M to a runner-up finish in the College World Series, sources tell Horns247.com that Jim Schlossnagel is leaving College Station to become the new head coach at Texas, bringing his coaching staff with him. Schlossnagel reportedly met with his players to tell them he had a decision to make about whether to rejoin his friend and former AD Chris Del Conte at Texas or remain at College Station. Schlossnagel has a $1.35 million buyout that doubles to $2.7 million if he takes a job in the state of Texas, made his decision late Tuesday afternoon to join the Longhorns.
Wow, that is huge news in the world of college
seasons
baseball.
At TCU.
Yeah.
Before going to Texas A&M in 2022, he has gone 135-62 in three seasons at A&M, including a 53-15 record this year, culminating in a loss in the College World Series final to Tennessee this weekend. And yeah, Jim Schlossnagel leaving Texas A&M, but staying in the state and in the conference. And what a shot across the bow, Bill. Right?
No kidding.
What a shot across the bow.
All right. So I'm looking at the upcoming dates for the transfers for the transfer portal. The NCAA says the dates for 2024, it's 30 days once, 30 days after the championship, conference championship games are played, 30 days from that point, and then 15 days in the spring. If they reduce that to a total of 30 days, I wonder if they'll do it 15 days each. I mean, it would seem like they'd do that as opposed to doing a 30-day and then no spring window.
I think that's right. My guess would be that, I mean, the basketball window is 145-day window, right?
Basketball was from mid-March to the 1st of May.
And that's 145-day window?
145-day window.
You can cut that to 30 very easily.
Yes.
Football, there's the question.
Football has had two separate windows.
Maybe it's 15 and 15. Maybe it's 15 and 15.
Yeah, we will. I guess we'll find out. This is going to come up for proposal very soon.
They'd vote for it, and if they voted for it in October, one would think they would implement that window after this upcoming season.
I'm sure it would be immediate.
So yeah, we could have a different looking transfer portal window. How about a lot of news in the last 15 minutes of this show,
but yeah, I was just like, well, there's nothing going on. We talked about Tennessee winning the College World Series,
really,
and Florida
about,
winning the Stanley Cup.
We didn't really think about the baseball hot seat, right? The idea that you could have coaching changes happening
is
over in baseball. But yeah, I mean, the
especially to have a team that just finished runner up in the College World Series lose its coach.
Shocking piece of news, though, in the last 15-20 minutes, the report from Chip Brown at the Texas 24/7 site, Horns 247, reporting that Jim Schlossnagel, your new head coach at the University of Texas.
All right, we're going to get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports wise? If you've got a memorable summer job that you've had, don't forget Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us at the bottom of the hour. And if we have time, we'll run some more some more of the rest of that interview with John Cohen as well. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Hey, this is Kyle Rush with BC Stone Home.
Back on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and right now we're going to head to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and welcome in our good friend, Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how's it going today?
Man, I'm doing good. It's definitely a hotline. It's 1,000 degrees outside right now.
Today is the hottest day of the year. I mean, here we are. I mean, summer, it's...
Until tomorrow.
I don't know.
Just wait, Jake.
Yeah, well, the heat index may be worse tomorrow, but yeah, well, get used to it. I mean, that's just the way it is.
And you know, everything's bigger in Texas. Everything's hotter in Texas. We'll be seeing each other in Dallas in a couple of weeks for SEC Media Days. Really looking forward to seeing how they roll out the red carpet in the Lone Star State for SEC Media Days with Texas and Oklahoma joining the league.
Oh man, I can't wait! It's going to be awesome. I'm glad that they're doing it out there. I think it was a smart move.
And just in the last half hour, it may be really interesting to watch the Longhorn and Aggies fans out there, as it appears that A&M baseball coach Jim Schlossnagle, who just played for the national title last night, came up short to Tennessee, but he is headed to Texas.
Yeah, well, I mean, last night he basically scolded a reporter saying, "Don't even ask me, I'm not taking another job. That's such a selfish question." And then he literally takes the Texas job the next day.
I was just saying a couple minutes ago, how bad does this suck for Texas A&M fans? I mean, you win the first game of the College World Series, you're a game away from being national champs. You drop the next two, and then the next day your coach heads to the horns.
Yeah, I mean, I think this gives a whole new, deeper meaning to adding insult to injury. This is like adding insult to you, your mother, your father, your grandmother, on top of what is already a deep wound. You were so close to winning it and didn't, but then you lose your head coach who finally took you there to one of the places you hate the most. It's just, it's just not a good situation.
No, it is. I mean, they spun the wheel and hit the bankrupt button, right? I mean, that's like
yeah.
I mean, you could find a Monopoly equivalent, right? They landed on a hotel then they couldn't afford. I mean, that's just, it's brutal. And I mean, Schlossnagle leaving for any college job would be a huge blow. After the season he just had, and after the College World Series culminates, but to go to Texas and the fact that they're going to see him in that Texas uniform next year in SEC play. I mean, it's a shot across the bow, Jake.
I mean, the man went Harvey Dent, let's be honest. I mean, he went the ultimate. You either die a hero or live long enough to become a villain, Dan.
I mean, it is a shocking turn of events for the state of Texas in college baseball. And yeah, as though anything needed to intensify that rivalry. Here we are with Jim Schlossnagle switching to burnt orange.
Yeah, Texas 6 days away from officially being in the SEC, and they're coming in with a proven SEC coach who just played for the national title. That's just life. That's life in the fast lane. Life in the big time here in the SEC. As last night, Tennessee with that win, they're the fifth different SEC team to win the last five College World Series.
Yeah, I think this is two out of the last 3 years. It's been an all SEC final. I mean, if you look at it, there was eight teams, four from the SEC, four from the ACC. And not one ACC team beat an SEC team. The only teams that beat an SEC team were SEC teams. And, you know, you think this is bad. Now that Texas and Oklahoma is coming in college softball, nobody else has.
Oh, God. No. I mean, that's even crazier. The fact that 13 SEC teams, field teams, all of them made the tournament. And the two teams that play for the national title are the two teams that are joining the conference.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's, again, I've said this since I got into sports media, and it's not a crazy thing. It's when the SEC decides it wants to be the best at something, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I mean, you look at college basketball, I know the SEC didn't have the greatest NCAA tournament showing. Bama did make the Final Four, but, I mean, you could say there's not a higher rising conference in college basketball. We know about college football. You look at college baseball, you look at softball, you look at men's golf, you look at women's golf. I mean, I don't know if they play Quidditch, but if they did, we're probably the best at that too.
So, Jake, we got a piece of news from the D1 Council of the NCAA in the last hour or so. We were talking about, we've discussed, you know, fine-tuning the transfer portal and what different coaches and student athletes would like to see as sort of the rules. I don't know what sort of, like, what do you think would be ideal? There's talk of shortening the portal windows from 45 to 30 days.
Apparently that's what they're going to propose. If they do that, Jake, my question is, all right, so are we going to have two 15-day windows, or is there only going to be one portal window in college football at the end of the regular season? What would you think?
I know. I hope they make it one portal window. Like, I just, let's make this thing as quick and get it out of the way, no lingering, because that does make it easier, right, to be able to build a team, and it makes a guy have to make a decision. Like, I'm all for shrinking the portal window, and it helps the calendar, right? Because the calendar is so screwed up in college football right now in general. I mean, during bowl season, heck, you have some coaches that have to stick around and can't go to the bowl prep to try and go recruit. It's just, it's so wonky. Anything they can do to shorten the portal window, make people make a decision, I'm all for.
Yeah, I just wonder, one of the things that Hugh Freeze has talked about is, does there need to be that entire month of December for the portal window, because just what you're talking about. I mean, trying to recruit, if you are bowl prep, or, you know, now that we have 12 teams, there are going to be a lot more people preparing for bigger things than just a bowl game as well, while you're trying to recruit, while you're trying to retain your players who are thinking about getting in the portal and bringing in other guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, thank goodness the new signing period's in December. Can you imagine if it was all the way in February, like having to deal with that for another 2 months? Look, in my opinion, and listen, if you're not making the playoff, you know, teams that are in the playoff, there's going to be very rarely an opt-out. I firmly believe that. But if you're a team that is not in the playoff, even the way it's set up with the December signing period, I mean, it's tough right now. So, to me, you know, that's why some coaches are trying to push for a summer signing day where you actually sign high school players before they even play their senior season of football, which I think that's a little bit of a bridge too far. But by shortening the window, you do speed up the decision-making process, and you do help the calendar.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. I know that coaches, I would think, would be very much in favor of just having that one 30-day window at the end of the regular season. That way you'd know when you start the spring term, you're going through the off-season workouts, you know who should be around. I guess the option would be, you know, players could still transfer, but they wouldn't be eligible that next year. So that would deter an awful lot of people from jumping after the window closes in early January.
It would make everything a lot cleaner. To me, I wish they would just have the rest of December after, you know, and it really doesn't matter, I guess, with the high school players and signing day. But if you did do that, it'd be much more concise, and you would know the ability to structure a roster would be so much easier if they just did it that way, and then it goes back to the old, well, if you want to transfer evenly or you want to transfer up, then you have to sit a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we'll see. I mean, this is coming up for proposal, and we'll see what happens there. In the meantime, speaking of restructuring rosters, again, I look at what Hugh Freeze has done. We've talked about this with you, but I mean, on the air, you know, with listeners and as well. But the job of restructuring this roster has just been amazing, and Auburn continues. They add a player from the transfer portal in Jaquez Robinson after Tyler Scott goes down with a knee. I think they need another DB anyway, but they continue to add recruits. I said this a week or so ago, and I'd love your thoughts on this, Jake. I mean, Auburn and Hugh Freeze was so far behind when he came in. I mean, they were trying to catch up on the current year's class while other schools were recruiting the next couple of years. But I think that in a year and a half, they've caught up. They're right there with everybody else in recruiting, not just for now, but for the next few years down the road.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to put it in two buckets, and you just did. One is the roster they have right now. I mean, there are very few rosters that have been flipped in such a positive way that like Auburn's. I mean, you look around the country. I mean, what Coach Freeze has done, especially up front at the line of scrimmage, because that's where it starts and stops. That's the tree. You just put the ornaments around it, and obviously the star is the quarterback that you put on top. But the reason you're seeing all this success in the future recruiting classes is because he's had time to build that relationship, right? Because, again, if I'm going to ask for your most prized possession, which is your child, for at least 3 years, we should probably have a pretty good and deep relationship that has endured over time. And that's something you can't force. That's something you can't, you know, fabricate. That's something you can't just magically appear and be like, hey, I promise, you know, here's an IOU. Keep this one. That's a great one. So that isn't the part that shocked me. But it's a good mixture, I think, of getting young guys that you've evaluated that have a year in the system now, like the Keldrick Faulks and guys like that, mixed with some of the flex seal pickups, as I call them, that they've had on both sides of the line of scrimmage. So you can develop these guys that you signed, the high school offensive linemen and defensive linemen. I think Hugh Freeze and them have threaded the needle. I think they've put themselves actually, and no coach will ever say, yeah, we're ahead of schedule, but I actually think they're ahead of schedule from a roster standpoint.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, I was when I looked at it and just started thinking about it, I thought, man, I thought it would take longer than this, and they have done a great job of adapting. I thought they really improved. I think the addition of Will Redmond sure didn't hurt, but I mean no. their ability to track and not just track but get potential transfers on campus as quickly as possible, playing it differently than you do recruiting when you may want to get that last shot with the high schoolers.
Well, you know what it feels like, Bill? It feels like it's a well-oiled, organized machine.
Doesn't it? That's
what it feels like. And that's what you got to have. I mean, before this, it was just like, just, you know, shooting blow darts in the dark. Like, it was just, oh, well, you know, there's a method to the madness. There is a vision. But even better than a vision, there is an actual action that is taking place to see that vision. Because it's so great to sit up there and say, well, we're not going to take the elevator, or we're going to do this, and we're going to do that.
That's God,
great.
I'd forgotten
that. But how are you going to build this thing up from a personnel standpoint and be able to put yourself even in the position to sign guys to help you carry out that vision? So it's so nice to be able to look at something getting built, and the guys are showing up on time, right? The construction is actually on time and even ahead of schedule, as opposed to driving past the same lot and there's just nothing but broken bricks and a wheelbarrow and some dude smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, there's no question that, I mean, what Hugh Freeze said is what he is doing. He wants to build this based on high school recruiting. And granted, I mean, the transfer portal, you're not going to be able to guarantee that you keep them all, but it's a whole lot better to have that, try to have that as a foundation and fill in any gaps that you have with the transfer portal.
Yes. I mean, again, it all, if you have no structure and you have no ability to iron out the details, and again, I mean, every visit you've heard from a kid and everything that I've heard is everything has gone so smoothly, right? It's just like anything. When you're trying to show somebody a good time, you want the things to happen in the way that they're supposed to happen. So it's understanding when you can get guys in, not only just to get them in, but when you can get them in and show them the best time possible or give them the most information in the best way to be able to make a good decision. And I just feel like for the first time in a while, when I look at Auburn, it doesn't look like the Beverly Hillbillies packing all their stuff and driving down the road. It looks like we got a nice 18-wheeler that's air conditioning, stuff's not breaking in the back, and that's what Auburn should have because it's a nice place that players should be crawling over broken glass backwards to be able to get to.
Great stuff as always, Jake. I mean, some great insight. Hey, let everybody know what you got coming up on Crane & Company.
Definitely. Well, look, Auburn not being in the top 10 of the toughest places to play in the new EA Sports video game is an absolute joke. We talked about that today. We're talking everything college football, everything that's going on in the sports world. We got live calls, a live chat from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Central. Come join us. If you can't catch us live, it stays on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify the whole time. Come hang out.
Thanks again, Jake, man. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
See you guys.
All right, Jake Crane joining us as he does Tuesdays, and to the we haven't talked about that today, but my feeling on Auburn not being listed as one of the tougher places is the people that are doing it just look at the last few years that hasn't been that tough for somebody to come in and play.
I'm more surprised with A&M getting the number one spot than I am with Auburn being left out of the top 10, you know, especially considering the last couple of years of Auburn football. But it does seem like we hear more, like it feels more like people in the stands talk about A&M to an extent, but you don't hear play, or maybe the other way. Maybe,
we were there this past year. I mean, it didn't seem like an intimidating place. It was nothing.
Compared to some of the
compared to a lot of other SEC
Athens
venues.
Or Tuscaloosa or Gainesville.
Baton Rouge.
What would if you couldn't pick Auburn, what would get your number? Would LSU get your number one spot?
LSU's up there. Probably.
Yeah, I'd be tempted.
Georgia.
Florida.
Athens is just a nasty.
I mean, when they're good.
I mean, right now the dogs are good though, and that's a place.
I get it. Yeah. Tennessee.
I don't know an awful lot of Auburn people want to go back to Athens.
Folks would not vote. There are people who tell you when Tennessee's good.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a tough place to
see. That's the thing. Auburn hasn't been good the last few years. Now I think that's why that Auburn isn't getting the respect. Doesn't have that respect at least right now from some. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us. Here on the Tuesday Drive.
What's up, guys?
ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final couple of minutes here on the Tuesday Drive. And I think we have a call. Let's see if we can get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Hello, you're on the drive.
Yes, Pat.
Hey, Pat, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Y'all brought up the pitching or the coach from Texas A&M, and y'all are baseball gurus, the biggest gurus I know. I was just curious. Okay, so Texas A&M won the first game. They're up 1-0 in the bottom of the seventh inning with man on first and second and two outs. They went through two pitchers on the first day and then their closer, I think, for a couple innings. Mm-hmm. And then on the second day, they had gone through, I think, two pitchers or one pitcher and a little bit of another pitcher. So they bring in this guy, and I was listening to the stats. There was a freshman, and I'm pretty sure it's this Luke Jackson guy that I'm looking up trying to find him. They said he has 8.1 innings pitched for the year. They said that he had five SEC appearances. And in his five SEC appearances, he did not record a single out.
So you're talking about A&M in game two?
In game two, A&M is pulling their pitcher. They're winning 1-0 with runners on first and second and two outs. And their guy, it was an error that got the guy on first, and so they pulled their pitcher because I think he had pitched the whole game. He had done great. So they bring in another guy. And so on their roster, they have guys that pitch, you know, 35 innings, 64 innings, 48 innings, 31 innings. But they bring in a guy, and he's a freshman, and he's pitched 8.1 innings, and they said in his five SEC appearances, he did not record a single out. So that tells me that he came in, he couldn't get out, and they pulled him.
Yeah, I mean, that is – I wasn't able to watch – game two, that I read some of that. That is crazy. He was a redshirt freshman, I believe. He's a guy that had sat out the year before, but still, he doesn't have the experience you would think. I mean, Schlossnagel is a very highly respected coach. He must have felt that he liked the matchup somewhere. I don't know if Jackson had faced that hitter somewhere before. I don't know, but I have no idea.
Could be a guy who earned the job late, but no, it is a peculiar move to go to somebody.
Oh, especially when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you got some serious splaining to do. That's a great point, Pat. Oh, we are, appreciate the call. Yeah, we are out of time. Wow, already out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Dan and Jacob tomorrow on the drive. I will be back on Monday, so I'm sure I'm leaving the leaving everything in good hands. But I'm hoping I don't have any shark encounters down on the beach. I'm looking at a picture from yesterday, and like a 6-foot shark is right there.
Be careful down there. Sharks and everything else.
I don't mess with them. No. All right, that's going to do it for the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
The results are in.